Dragons, songs, and storybooks. I loved listening to Papa's deep voice as onomatopoeias rolled off his tongue, and when he shared with me his favorite Urdu ghazals, I smelled cardamom and cologne on his clothes. Mama read me a story every night at bedtime. She was like the princesses we read about, her long hair streaming on my pillow, as we held the book and looked at pictures together. Dragon stories were my favorite. I liked the way they breathed fire, the way they could fly anywhere. They were magical, immortal. I used to wonder about them. What would it feel like if all the people you loved vanished and you were the only one left forever? Did the storybook dragon roar his fearsome roar and burn everything down? Did he return to his forest glade to watch over it? Where was he now? How did he feel? There were never any answers to my questions. But sometimes in my dreams, I feel the wind lift me up with delicate fingers, holding me just below my chest. We fly together, and I hear him behind me. "Lonely, lonely, lonely," he whispers, carrying a wisp of smoke and the faint smell of dragon's breath as he sets me gently back to earth.
Welcome to Poets Cafe. Tonight's guest is Ami Kay, visiting us from my hometown of Chicago. She is the author of a gorgeous collection of poems, What Hands Can Hold. Her poetry, reviews, and articles have appeared in various journals, including the Naugatuck River Review, Kentucky Review, Tiferet, the Scottish Poetry Review, and others. Ami edited and published Sunrise from Blue Thunder in response to the Japan 2011 disasters and co-edited First Water, Best of Perrine's Fountain. Ami's work was nominated for the James B. Baker Award. She is the publisher of Glass Lyre Press and the editor of Perrine's Fountain. Welcome, Ami.
Thank you so much, Lois. It's such a privilege to be here with you. I've always admired all the work you do at Poets Cafe and the wonderful talents that you interview.
Oh, thank you. Well, now we have you here and we can celebrate your wonderful talent. I love that, Dragons. It just evokes the child that is Ami, the girl who was fascinated by stories. And you were, how old were you when you wrote that?
I was 11 years old.
Okay.
I wrote a lot of not very good poems when I was that age.
Hey, but this one is gorgeous. And especially, you know, that I'm lonely, lonely, lonely. I don't know, there's something about that. And it's very touching, too, you know, because we think about that, what happens.
Yes.
When everyone goes away and there's no one left.
Yes, I think I'd written to you at another time that I think children are natural philosophers.
Yeah.
They're always asking why and where and when. And
that's right.
I think those are the elements that make up a story.
It's true. And poets are kind of natural philosophers, too.
This is very true, absolutely.
Right? Yeah.
All that imagination and all that stuff going on. So, yes.
And it was a big part of your upbringing. Did your father write poetry as well, or?
He didn't actually write poetry, but he was extremely interested in Urdu poetry, ghazals.
Okay.
He read quite a few, and he listened to them more as musical, set to music.
Mm-hmm.
So the ghazals that he listened to were already set to certain ragas.
Ah.
So when he listened to them, he got a sort of a dual exposure to both music and poetry together, combined. Mm-hmm. And I think that sort of was synergistic in the sense that it sort of amplified the meanings.
Sure.
And he was able to somehow communicate that to me and develop my love for music and poetry together.
Mm. Now, for our listeners, ghazal is a kind of a lyric poem with a fixed number of verses and a repeated rhyme. There's more
exactly.
specific to that,
yes,
but
yes.
That kind of gives them mm-hmm. an idea.
Yes.
And did he know any by memory, or was he reading them to you?
He knew a few, mm-hmm. but he used to listen to them on, you know, tapes or, you know, when I was growing up, he insisted that I should learn music. So I took some voice lessons,
mm-hmm.
and the person who taught me was very good at singing ghazals in particular.
Oh, wow, that's amazing.
So I studied it, and because I was, you know, a child, I didn't really understand all the meanings. So I guess I sang them without any real expression.
Mm-hmm.
And my father would correct that by telling me this is what it means. So, you know, show a little expression when you're singing.
Mm-hmm.
So that really made me kind of understand both poetry and music.
Right.
And that sort of developed my appreciation for all kinds of poetry, not just Urdu or English, but you know, poetry from all over the world. And I think that has a lot to do with the fact that today, as an editor, I have a very eclectic taste. I don't have a specific preference that I only like this kind of poetry. I'm very open to different kinds of poetry.
Sure. And that kind of influence, I mean, the influence of music, I think, can expose you to that.
Absolutely. Music is a language.
It's a language. And we have, every poet has their rhythm, has their voice. You know, we express different rhythms in our poetry. But if you notice, I mean, I've noticed reading certain poets, you kind of get into a certain wavelength when you read them.
Absolutely.
Yeah, there's a certain
Absolutely.
Voice.
It's like that voice print.
Yeah, it's a voice print. Did he read, do you remember, Ghalib or Iqbal?
Yes, Mirza Ghalib.
Ghalib, thank you.
Iqbal,
uh-huh.
Fez, Ahmed Fez.
Mm-hmm.
So all of these, you know, I think Ghalib was his favorite, and
okay.
Ultimately he became my favorite too.
What a beautiful environment.
Oh yes,
to
gorgeous.
To be raised in. And yeah, and so that developed your love of music. And did you play piano?
I played piano shortly. Both my sons actually studied piano for a number of years. And
mm-hmm.
my older son was extremely good at piano. And after they kind of grew up and left, you know, I asked their teacher, who's a Russian lady and brilliant pianist, and I asked her if she could give me lessons. And she was very, very kind, and she taught me. So the good thing is that I had a very good ear.
Mm-hmm.
The bad thing is I had very bad fingers.
So get them together.
So one day I wrote her a thank you note, and she told me very tactfully, you know, I think you would make a very good writer.
She didn't. She discouraged me.
No, no, she never discouraged me.
Oh,
she always
good.
Used to come and ask me, are you still practicing?
That's funny. So speaking of, you know, movement, there's a beautiful poem that you have called Tango. And I wonder if you'd read that for
us. I would love to read it. Okay. Tango. Touch the swelling mouth of music, spilling on the consecrated tongue. Zigzag swing of hip, palm to palm, eyes locked, bite into a bitter stem. Abrazzo, clasp, entwine legs, untangle, step in unison. Curves of the guitar swallow the low moan of strings. Fierce rhythms of Albanese, Granados, Ibanez are caught in undertow. torn petals fly, shredding decorum. High on rose fumes, the off-center beat on beat drags you under. Voice seared by constricted throat, tight-spun strains uncoil, unleashing energy. A flare ignites, spreading through synapses, the dazzle and the heat, incandescence of explosion, collapsing lung on sucked-in air, surrender.
Surrender. Yeah, that's what you got to do in tango. You got to surrender, right?
Yeah.
You got to surrender the body. I forget when I landed in Mendoza in Argentina after flying for 13 hours. And the first thing we did after I had a couple hours of sleep is we were in a tango club. And there were all these people, you know, they were laying all over. Speaking of tango, if you've just danced in, you're listening to host Lois P. Jones, and I'm in the studio with our wonderful guest today, Ami Kay of Glass Lyre Press. In an essay from Diode entitled Behind the Blue Pencil, you begin with a marvelous quote from the poet Lu Qi, which is, writing's a struggle between presence and absence.
It's true.
Yeah, and I was thinking about that in terms of your, you know, you wrote this piece and how difficult it is to write about something that's movement, kinesthetic. The challenge of that, because dance is also a language, too,
absolutely,
right?
Absolutely, absolutely. I think all the arts, poetry itself is a language. We use a language to express our feelings in a very compact form.
Right.
And a metaphor to express something that we can't always say in ordinary language.
Mm-hmm.
So certainly music, dance, art, all of these are just amazing languages. And the more we fall into them, the deeper we want to go.
That's right. That's right. It's being like being in that tango club. Never want to leave from there. It's like this is like being in Vegas. There's no windows. You're in that club all
night. It's exciting.
But I really admire the way you held on to that tension in the poem. And I love that it's sort of a Lorca-like implosion, the low moan of strings.
Yes.
Mm. Yeah, it's beautiful.
Thank you. Thank you.
Moving into your next poem, let's hit on that. And then, we're going to get into your editing and everything.
Shadow Nocturne. You were a skein of nerve, blood from my marrow. Sliver of bone, a silver weave of luminous cloth, a fire that spread through electric nerves, your little core palpated in its fine mesh, its tremolo of strings could not hold you. You shrugged off my body and slipped seamlessly, knife-edge moon in the water, final glide from the womb, before dissolving into a blossom on the snow. Against the light, I thought I saw your tiny fist, too quickly pulled back before I could grab you. Skin-tight storms ripped a trail of fireflies from the sky, but I remember only the ripe weight of grief, an ocean, with you curled underwater as if you could breathe at all from pinched blue nostrils. Fallen sparrow, tiny creature I could hold in my palm. I thought I could reach out and kiss your delicate eyelashes, but they were airbrushed with disappearing ink on a fluttering moth that vanished into the remnants of night.
It's just beautiful.
Thank you.
Thank you. And here the theme of music brings on a different element, the nocturne, a shadow nocturne. And the theme of loss.
Yes.
Just beautifully expressed in this poem. A blossom on the snow. Suddenly, you know, we're seeing the vision of blood and snow.
Yes.
And then you've isolated that. You transformed it into this incredibly powerful image. And it's very understated. It's very sort of hushed, too. It's like something moving under the surface of ice, you know. Yeah. I don't know how to describe it. And I know that you admire understatement in poetry. I mean, you've done it so beautifully here. Is there a particular poet or poets whose work brings that aspect out?
I think it's more of, you know, I sort of admire the Japanese aesthetic of restraint.
Right.
I do. I come from India, which is a very beautiful, colorful culture, and I sort of grew up watching a lot of the movies, and sometimes I found them almost a little overwhelming, and there was almost too much.
Bollywood.
Bollywood. So I think I kind of gravitate, especially in writing, towards more, like, less is more to me. And I think not just in poetry, but even in other things, general aesthetics, I like that feel. It just makes me, I feel comfortable with it. For this particular poem, I think sometimes the grief can be so heavy and so much that it's really not very easy to express, and it's almost easier to say a little less about it.
So true.
Because some of it, which is locked inside you, isn't really something that you can express to anybody else.
There's poems that I still can't write about. You know,
it
seems like too much as soon as you put pen to it.
Exactly.
But, I mean, this is just an exquisite piece of work.
Thank you so much.
I want to ask you, move now into the publishing world. What drew you to that? Your tagline of Glass Lyre Press is exceptional works to replenish the spirit, which is really beautiful.
Thank you. I think, you know, when we started Pyrene's Fountain, we wanted to start to create a venue that would be inclusive in the sense that we would have people who were submitting work that had just started writing, and yet we had people who were well-established in the field and sending us work too, all together coming to the same watering hole, so to speak, and not saying, well, we only take this kind of work or we only take that kind of work. I think at every level of competence of writing, every kind of writing, every school, every kind of topical treatment, there's always a point where someone can be an exceptional writer. And something that moves you, you can always find that somewhere. And I think that's what we wanted to do, is gather those voices. And then once we published the Japan anthology in response to the 2011 disasters, that was a benefit anthology, I think I enjoyed so much the process of putting a book together because previously we had done it online.
Right.
And I said, well, how would it be if we started a press? And I was like, I don't know if I can even do that. But, you know, we added some staff and I asked them and they were all so supportive. They said, yes, let's do it. Let's try it. And, you know, it's always kind of been a dream, I think, since I was a child. I've always wanted to put a book together, and it's an exciting, exciting journey to work with an author.
That's great.
So I think that's where it all came from, and I have an incredible supportive staff. Each one of them is a gem, and they work in a different department, all sort of putting their talents together to create one thing. So we have the common cause, the common goal. But all of us are coming from a different direction to sort of make this happen.
And you have some exceptional authors. I've read a number of the books. And, of course, you have John Tribble, Dennis Maloney, Joan Colby, Mark Fraser, Ruth Goring. Is Rustin Larson one of your?
Yes, yes. We published his.
I saw his name because we have a book here from him. And I'm like, wait a minute. That's right. You published him.
Yes, his book is called The Philosopher Savant.
That's right. That's right. Yeah, he's great.
He's wonderful.
Yeah.
And he started with us, you know, very early on with PF, and he was very supportive of PF Pyrenees, and he went kept you know, sending in his work, and he's fabulous.
That's when you know. I mean, you got to love those people that are supporting you when you're starting out.
Yes.
Because they're giving you their good stuff.
They sure are.
They're not waiting for you to be, you know, amazing. And you published Lynn Lifshin.
Yes.
Who's a, she's a very prolific poet. Okay, so she's published over 140 books and chapbooks. And she said about you, no one could have been better to work with than the publisher Ami K.
Very kind of her.
140 books, so she should know.
Yeah.
If you've just tuned in, this is host Lois P. Jones, and we're here with our wonderful guest dishing about poetry and publishing. Ami Kay is here from Chicago, and she is with Glass Lyre Press, and we're talking about all things publishing, and her gorgeous, the gorgeous books. I mean, they just seem to be getting more and more incredible. I'm like, oh, look at this cover. This is amazing. So I know that's your, Steve
is our book designer, and Tracy does a lot of our artwork, Tracy McQueen. But we also use two other freelance artists, and a lot of times the poets will bring their own work to us or stuff that they want us to use, you know, like photographs or, say, a friend's artwork. But until you see a person design a book, you have no idea what a huge impact that can make, because you see the raw artwork, and that's beautiful. But then when you actually choose the correct font and the size and the margins and the different kind of design elements, it just all pops out and, you know, hangs together perfect. It's an art, you know.
It really is an art. It's an art just as much as editing is an art, because you have to have a perfect balance.
Exactly.
Of color, the fonts. I've seen bad fonts on it. You know, it's like, look at this great art, but, you know.
Right.
So there's a lot of balance, work that goes into
exactly.
that. Exactly. And all of your books are different.
They are indeed. I mean, they're different not only in content, but even in production. Because Steve, again, he's our layout editor. Mm-hmm. And what we do, which is slightly different from other publishers, is that we offer 5 font header styles.
That's really cool.
To each author that is custom picked for them. He has a whole compendium of font styles and things that he keeps.
That would take me about 10 years to figure out. Oh, wait a minute. What about this font and this kind of thing? Yeah. No, that's great.
So that's what, you know.
It's good to have choices like that.
Yes.
We're getting a little bit close to the closing of the show, and I want to do 2 things. First, I want to quote something beautiful that you said here about editing, and then we can, you know, go out with your poem. You said, editing is an art as well as a skill. A good editor develops a pitch-perfect ear for what is said as well as for what is left unsaid. An editor can visualize a finished book just as a conductor can hear an entire symphony while still being able to isolate the dynamics of each instrument. It goes on a little bit more, but I just love that, again, that musical theme comes back into your perception and your way.
I think music just plays a very, very huge part in my life, in my writing life. And the next manuscript that I'm working on is also themed around music. It's called Flute Songs of Tanjore.
Sounds beautiful. So we're going to let you take us out with your beautiful poem, Woodwinds.
Woodwinds. The swell of gravity collects a body of lightness within its ample lungs. The whir of a hummingbird sculpts the half-open blackness from trees that hug the earth's breast in their clutching roots, and through them, wind, always wind and air, elements that burn and feed the fire, and flow between the rocks and clouds, growing from tiny breaths to full-blown sounds. In sweet convergence, rush of air, invisible sigh, A floating lightness follows the trail of a lonely, haunting piping. The moving shape of air, its ability to flow, creating pitch when weaving in and out of tiny holes in reeds and hollow wood. Inhale, exhale, unraveling plates of sound, the winds rearrange a new existence. And on the way they learn their voices, piccolo, flute, oboe, clarinet, bassoon.
Wonderful. I'm host Lois P. Jones, and you've been listening to Poets Cafe with our very special guest, Ami Kay. Thank you, Ami, for spending time with us this evening.
Thank you, Lois. It's been such a delight having this wonderful conversation with you.
And for those of you listening in who want to know where you can pick up these gorgeous books, you can get them on Glass Lyre Press, LYRE, and also on Amazon. You've been listening to Poets Cafe on KPFK, Pacifica Radio for all of Southern California and beyond.